Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker, and today on the show, I am talking to the founder of Neem London, Nick Reed, returning guest. Nick was on a couple of years ago to talk shop about, literally to talk about the brand launching, and here we are a couple of years in. We've got some bricks and mortar down in Piccadilly Arcade. We've just opened up a little boutique there, and Neem is named after the tree in India, famed for producing leaves with healing properties. The eponymous brand is designed as an antidote to the modern ways of consumption, an antiseptic for fast fashion, and we get into all of that and more. This was a really great conversation. Great to catch up with Nick, and hopefully you'll appreciate this one. Neem London is the place to go, neemlondon.com. And yeah, here is Nick to talk about Neem in his own words.
So yeah, I'm Nick Reed. I am the founder of Neem London. So I've worked in menswear for a few years. I still have to sort of do some side hustle work to help finance Neem. So I joined Charles Tirrett as a startup and then grew with them to 200 million. I was buying a brand director there. Then I left there and went to Moss Bros. They were a PLC and they wanted to go private. So I went there for 4 or 5 years as buying and merchandising and then buying a brand director. And they were taken private. Then I left them and then started Neem London. And Neem London is a brand that's focused on low emitting menswear, really. So we want to create product with the lowest carbon emissions possible whilst ensuring it's stylish and suits modern day living, which is, you know, versatile, seasonless, and extremely comfortable.
Interesting. Nick, were you seeing that seasonless wardrobes were becoming a thing when you were part of like Charles Tirrett and Moss Bloss? Like, it wasn't so much that you had to bring things out spring, autumn, winter. Was that something that was already marinating in your mind coming into Neem London?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think in menswear, things were being forced into seasons. And because of the habitual nature of, well, we buy this in autumn and this in spring, and that's what we did last year. So that's what the numbers say. So we'll repeat it and then we'll discount and then we'll buy more stuff. I think in menswear, men, especially in this country, so other than specific events, you know, weddings, holidays, and things like proms and so on, I think men are tending to wear product for the same product for 9-10 months of the year. And then there's an extreme of that, you know, there's heavy knitwear and heavy coats, and then there's lightweight, very hot weather clothing. But in between, it's a fairly staple wardrobe. This forcing stock into the market, trying to get a very high rate of sale, too high rate of sale, I'd say, you know, the number of units you sell per week, meant that things were being discounted too early, being pushed out too early. So it was leading to this sort of drug of, we need new stock, it hasn't sold, we must run a discount, it hasn't sold, we'll run Black Friday. So and actually the balance is much more stable than that. If you take the rate of sale down, ensure that your cover is a bit longer and you're prepared to sit on the stock for a bit longer, you can present it in different ways throughout the selling period. But I really believe in, you know, versatility and as much seasonless products as possible within menswear.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, we were speaking offline about me running a shop back in the day, and I completely agree with that point 100%. You had so much stock that would come into the shop that I was running that you'd be wishing that it would sell. But then if you had a really crap summer, like we've had a pretty average summer this time around here in the UK as well.
Yeah,
it's been very wet,
true.
And not many people have had the chance to get, you know, their summer weapons out, you know, their go-to summer choices that they want to wear to those really special events. And if you've only got them out once or twice a year, you feel like they're getting, I don't know, there's no value in buying these pieces anymore. But if you were selling them, you'd then have to go, right, okay, we'll have to put half of whatever we have on sale here
or just kind of smuggle it into the other seasons, you know, surreptitiously, or maybe put it out next season and hope no one notices. You know, that was the kind of tricks that we had to pull in retail way back when.
Yeah, and that sort of operating in that old way, isn't it? It's new. It's going to do well. Oh, it's a last year product. We're almost slightly ashamed of it. Whereas we do a couple of sort of different things where we run a pre-order model or advanced order, as we call it. And then once that product has sold through, of which quite a number have, if it sells well, we then batch up again and repeat order. So that there's no seasonality to it. It's just a blue overshirt or a white T-shirt. And if there's a demand for the product, so we're taking advanced order on it, we then place a repeat order. If there's no demand for the advanced order, then we remove it from the site. So we continue to sell things when they're out of stock, even though we may not have a purchase order against it. And then I think that then means that you're always supplying to demand.
Right.
And also you're not repeat ordering on things until you know that there is a demand. And then the other thing we do, which is less demand driven, but more price sensitive driven, to because we don't offer discounts really. We don't run sort of mid season or end of season sales. But what we do is offer a discount if you order a product and have it delivered 4, 6, 8 weeks later. So again, that is proving that seasonality isn't as important in menswear. So men are prepared to sort of order an overshirt in July and get it delivered in September, but get a 15%, 20% discount on that. We offer discounts for advanced order, and we offer discounts for product that you order but have delivered later, even though it's in stock in our warehouse.
That's interesting. There must be a community with your consumer, like within the brand, in order to do this, so that you'd reach out and go, look, guys, if you're willing to fulfill the purchase order, then we'll bring this back in stock and happily supply you with it. Again, like you were just saying, if you want to order it in advance, we'll happily give you a discount. There must be like a groundswell of people, your customers, basically, that are quite loyal to you, that know about these perks. I'm just wondering, how did that hive start? How did you find your village to begin with to get those policies for your brand off the ground?
Well, I mean, it's still building. We're still quite a small hive. But really, I mean, a razor sharp focus on who we were targeting. I mean, we were targeting, you know, two customers really of Gen X. You know, we sell a bit to Gen Y, you know, we sell a bit to 30 somethings, but we're predominantly selling to 40, 50, 60 somethings, who fit into two types. There's a type that really knows about the climate crisis and is well-educated, probably spends too much time on YouTube documentaries or reading, or might even work in it. You know, they work in environmentalism and ecology of some form. And they just love us because it's a style that suits them they have now found something that is genuinely low carbon. And then the second customer, and that customer is small, so they're the advocates who love us, and you know, they'll come to events and they'll also refer us to their friends. And then the second type is a guy who might be starting to make some changes to their life. So they might be eating a little less red meat. They might be flying a little less. They might be looking on labels a bit more, but they're also lying to themselves. So they say that they're sort of sustainable because they're putting the recycling out, or they say that they care about the climate crisis because they didn't order a steak last night. And then when you go deep into conversation, quite often, oh, well, I'm flying away this weekend for somewhere. So they like us just because they like the style first. And then secondly, it reduces a bit of their guilt. It makes them feel better about the purchase. Right. But the education around the impact of fashion is still very, very low in the general public. So in the industry, we're quite aware there's a lot of press and air and coverage given to it. But actually, within the general public, people don't really still understand what impact fashion has and what they can do in order to, instead of buying as well as just buying secondhand, everyone understands that. But many people don't really understand what they can do in order to reduce their impact when it comes to fashion, or indeed where they should go and what they should look out for.
You know,
and I still think there's a bunch of customers who don't care, right? You know, there's they either aren't concerned about the climate crisis, or they certainly aren't concerned with it when it comes to fashion. They just want to, you know, look good at a wedding.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said that. I haven't actually thought about it, but the information around clothes and the impact that it has on the environment, I think, is red hot within the industry sector. So, like, you have, and I think every kind of blogger and fashion journo would have heard of Dana Thomas, for example. But if you ask a general person on the street what the impact or where they made their clothes, or if you want to go, right, have a look inside your shirt label now, where do you think your shirt was made? You know, I'd like to see the numbers on how many people would get that right, for example. And I don't know, outside of the brands doing something for themselves, where that education begins, whether it has to be like on the curriculum at school or something that, you know, gets taught very early on, that you have to be quite tuned in and turned on, because it's having a big effect later down the road.
Yeah, I mean that's, and we use recycled materials, and we use a regenerative cotton, traceable back to farm, and then we study, you know, cradle to now grave, the life cycle of the product and the estimated carbon emissions and water usage. It's quite detailed, it's quite deep. So for us, what we found was opening a store allowed us to have those conversations, because the type of conversation you have with somebody who walks in the door will be different depending on their interests. Some people quite often the first thing they think about is logistics. What about the transport? It's like, as a percentage of the total carbon emissions of a product from, you know, in conception or inception to death, logistics is tiny. It's like it's sort of less than 1%, but it's the one thing people understand.
Yeah.
And it's the one thing people sort of want to talk about. So some people talk about logistics, some people are more interested in water and the impact of water, because they've read something around that. Some people are interested in dye and the impact of dyes and how that, some people are more interested in farming and how a crop is farmed and what you know, insecticides or pesticides are used, and some people are more interested at end of life, what happens to the product. But there's so much within that life cycle that in order to try and succinctly talk about that online or in a paid ad, it's quite challenging, because you might be really interested in secondhand, but the next person is much more interested in how long does it last, or how versatile is the product? So I know I'm going to wear it in lots of different places in lots of different ways, because you've shown me how to style it, and I can wear it as a jacket, I can wear it as a shirt, I can wear it as a jumper even. So yeah, having a store was vital to not only learning about what the customers care about, but also ensuring the conversation you're having is about something that they're interested in, rather than forcing a topic on them, because some people just aren't interested in certain things, but they are in others.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
So let's talk about the store. I presume this is the Ecological Emporium that we've just launched.
Yeah. So we opened up in Piccadilly Arcade last November as a pop-up, and we're now making it permanent.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then we're going to open up another pop-up in Spitalfields. But at the moment, we're trading out of Piccadilly. That's been... And this week, we're doing a John Lewis pop-up. Which is going quite well, but again, that's more of a conversation exercise. And at this point, you know, it is about conversations and awareness, and then the sales normally, but not always, follow.
So Piccadilly Arcade, right opposite Burlington Arcade, if I'm right. That's... I know Burlington Arcade is one of the oldest arcades in all of London. I mean, that's not just any old pop-up. If you're right opposite there in Piccadilly Arcade, I'm pretty sure that's of the same vintage, right? What was it like getting a pop-up there to begin with, and how did that even begin for you?
So we just targeted certain locations at where there was space. And I would urge any small or growing brand to run a pop-up and try and we did this, try and build a relationship with the landlord, and we put a pitch, you know, together to show them what we were doing, why we were different, and what we do to the store. You know, so we upcycled everything in the store. When we move into the store, we don't throw anything away. We take what's there and make the
what
best.
Was it before, Nick? Sorry to cut you off. What was it before?
So it was it was an umbrella company called Swain Adeney Briggs. So I don't think
that was it. Oh, that's. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you're up and running, but I'm sorry to see those guys go.
Well, they disappeared in the pandemic. Then were then bought out by French private equity, and then they've relaunched under the name Swain. So they've now got a bright new store. I think one in Burlington, and then one near Bond Street.
Oh, okay.
So they've had a lot of money pumped into them, but they're focusing more on, both hats and umbrellas. So it was a very old, fusty St. James store. It was patterned carpet, dark walls, deep mahogany furniture. And it still is, you know, really. Cornicing, ceiling rosettes downstairs. So we painted everything. Didn't rip anything up, didn't throw anything away. We painted it to give it a fresh life. We both upstairs and ground floor propped it, and we tend to prop with secondhand product as well. So it's a lot of eBay and market hunting, and then a few sort of trips to Covent Garden Flower Market. But the point is, going back to the question, is that, you know, there are deals out there. You know, landlords want new retailers that are offering something new in the market, that they give an energy. And we have a lot of events at our store. You know, every month or every 2 to 3 weeks, we'll have a party or an event or a discussion or a talk. So if you can say to a landlord, you know, we can cover the rates and the service charge, can we agree a deal that means that we're bringing a new energy, a youthful or a new modern spirit to the arcade, and we're offering something that is suitable for the time that we're living in. You know, people are caring more about the climate crisis each day. It's becoming a general, if not already, a topic. And then it's about striking a deal. But there are deals out there in any city. Anyone listening in any city across the country, you can see the space that's available. So target an area that you like the look of, work out who the landlord is, and contact them directly. You can start with a pop up, you know, a 4 to 6 week pop up. I would advise anyone not to do not that we've done this, and we're doing it in John Lewis this week, a week long pop up. But I have doubts about two, 3 day pop-ups unless you've got, you know, half a million social media following. So try and run a more extended pop-up that allows you to become part of the area and people work out what you're about. And then first conversation might just be that. And then second time might be a purchase. But there are deals out there to be done.
I think the key is what I picked up on with that is the talks that you're doing. I mean, you're saying you do it about two or three times a month. That is a hell of a lot of events, even just to like plan, even if you're just doing talks, even if it's just unique. I'm sure you have other people coming in and doing talks, but you still have something to prepare. You've got to have, I don't know, maybe a glass of vino for people to come in on reception. Who knows? It's still like, for example, I've got a tailor friend I won't name, but he has like events like every fortnight pretty much, and they're quite shallow in terms of the people that turn up, but it's high in quality of the people that turn up, and I think it's starting to spread now. But the idea of people just selling clothes on rails and rails of concertinas, I think is just so dead in the water now. There has to be an experience in the shop to get people in, even if it's just like a coffee stand on the side or someone else selling ice cream in the back. Having people come in for the reason that it's not just to buy clothes, but it's to talk about the philosophy around clothes and share experiences and have a community as well, develop around a brand, I think is key to any retail space now. So I'm excited. Where can people pick up on the, I guess there's newsletters that lets people know about these events for Londoners?
Yeah. If you go on an email newsletter, I mean, I often post about them on LinkedIn. I think the next one we're doing, we had August off, thankfully, but we've got two in September. We've got one, a wine tasting evening where we're tasting biodynamic and organic wines. And then we've got more of a autumn collection evening at the end of September. And just in store generally, I mean, you talk about the experience. What we talk about internally a lot is just conversations, just about the conversation might be about, ideally about the climate crisis and the product and how it's made and where it's made and the impact, but it might just be about, where they're going to the theater and why they're in London and what they're doing. But the important thing is the atmosphere, the music, the drinks. We often serve beer or soft drinks or Avalon Calvados, which we're real fans of. We often serve that as well later on in the day. So it's just a place, and we sometimes serve coffee as well, but it's a place that you want to spend some time in. You might not buy anything or always buy something, but you go away thinking, oh, that was a nice way to spend 20 minutes. And it was, I met someone nice in there, and it might be a conversation about, the summer exhibition at the Royal Academy. But as long as they remember the time that they spend in the store, because we've all been in stores and people have barely acknowledged you. And then you've walked out and you can't even remember going in there afterwards.
100%. Well, listen, also, I mean, I know it sounds a bit cliche, but it is London, right? So I often get asked by people that, when they come to London, if I can show them round, and which I'm happy to do if I have time. And I always take them to my shirt maker, and it's a great experience because this shirt maker is just so unique. It's very James Bond connected. It's kind of underground, so you have to make an appointment. So it feels like a well-kept best secret. And all I'm doing is basically being the conduit and showing people like the secret nuggets of London or one or two. But then we'll be in there and some people might order six shirts and some people might not. It's not really any skin off my back if they do or don't, but I do get a little buzz out of showing them something new that they wouldn't ordinarily see or hear about. And I think that's something that will develop, or probably has developed, when you have a community and an experience in a retail space, is if someone comes and they might spend 20 minutes with their mate, they might not buy anything, but again, when they come back to London or they have relatives or people come to town, they go, oh great, I know exactly the place to go. Let's see if they've got anything on tonight, or let's just go in and have a look at the shop. You'll get something very unique and different when you walk into your space as opposed to anywhere else. So I think it's always key to get a great buzz and a great word of mouth around a brand.
Yeah, I mean, what you're doing is that sort of that you're like an early adopter that's wanting to pass on
Yeah, I just want to look cool very early on.
Yeah, well, but yeah, that crowd really matters in when you're trying to scale from zero. That you, there are people that are genuinely early adopters. They like buying from new places. They like to be the ones in the in their friends and peers that are, have found the new band or the new restaurants and or the new clothes store. So those people are vital, and then scaling that via a referral scheme, but a referral scheme that isn't sort of incentivized in that standard. Oh, if your friend buys, you get £20 off. Trying to engage them in a way that is a little more enticing. So we run games where instead of we're a bit sort of anti-competition for competitions, we do the odd one because it sort of attracts a fairly competition-led crowd. Whereas we run a game where if you do various things for the brand, it might be, you know, buy something, it might be a Trustpilot review, it might be come to an event, it might be a referral, and then you earn a point or a coin, as we call them. And then the first person to 12 coins wins an experience, a two-night stay at a hotel, a case of free beer, £250 worth of Neem kit. So therefore, you're creating a bit of energy whilst the game is happening, and we post the leaderboard out and who's winning.
Oh, that's great.
And all it is really is an old style competition, but we do it in a way that creates, and we're still improving at it. You know, we've still got a lot of improvements, but those, yeah, you as an early adopter and referrals are vital within a startup brand. You need to get people talking about you and then talking about you as you are with your Savile Row shirt and James Bond to mates, and then generating business that way.
So who are your neighbors? Would it be, is Benson and Clegg still there? Because I saw the butcher paper up next to them last time I was down. That must have been about a year
no,
ago.
No, they're not. The Simon Carter's next door. Then there's a really lovely guy who's called The Valet that do a lot of the alterations and repairs for the tailors and shoe shine. Love those guys. Then there's a watch strap company that's opposite. Right. Aesop is on the corner. Yeah. Lou and Lingwood's at the other end. So it's good bunch of retail. I mean, it's eye-watering. I'm sure some of the jewelry stores, what they take in a year compared to us.
No, but I mean, I just bet they're glad that you guys are there bringing some footfall in for a start and creating a new energy in the place. I mean, like I was saying, when I had my shop way out in the sticks, we were pretty much the only shop in town, certainly the only clothes shop in town. But when anyone opened up a shop and just brought some new interest, something new to talk about, even if it's an old furniture shop, it was great just to see life in the town, or just like new energy and new people and new customers, basically. So I'm sure they're thrilled to have you there. Yeah, you're in good company. So I know the New and Lingwood guys, that's right by the Bramell statue. And then you have, yeah, you say you have Aesop at the end. That used to be a mustard shop. That used to be Mill, I think, before it was that. Anyway, going off the grass here. But yeah, that's basically, and Green Park, I think, is probably the nearest tube to you where people can come.
Yeah, it's sort of halfway, sort of near that Fortnum's area. So halfway between Green Park and Piccadilly Circus. Yeah, I mean, anyone who should pop in and say hello, and we've always got good music, good drinks, and hopefully some good menswear. It's improving all the time. You sort of, when you grow a brand, you sort of work out what people want and like from you, and what you're sort of good at and known for. So we're focusing a bit more on the products that we're better at. Yeah. So, and the products improving all the time, really, as we sort of introduce more color and pattern. And improve the styling of it.
And just going through your social channels, I saw with Ben Wishaw on there, so he's a customer of yours, and Colin Firth, is that right? Did they get some pieces?
Yeah, some of them. I mean, the customers in the interesting ones we've had in the store are Marcus Mumford, has been in a couple of times.
Ah.
Michael Gove has been in. And then Ralph Little is a friend of the brand.
Nice.
He is certainly very well read and educated on the climate crisis. And then we've had pieces on Colin Firth and Ben Whishaw as well. I mean, for us, the right people to wear the product are people that are sort of actively using their fame or their position to generate some awareness of the crisis and what we can do as individuals to try and or attempt to make an impact or lower impact and make an impact on the way businesses perform.
Sidebar on that one, Nick. What is the policy, for example, when either Michael Gove or Ralph Little come into the shop? When it comes to, you can have a chat, they might buy something. Do you then go, is it all right if I just put my arm around you and get a shot for the socials? Or are you kind of a little bit like I was? Because I won't name names. I was working with another tailor in Shoreditch and I had Ray Winstone. I'll name his name, but not the tailor. Ray Winstone comes in and buys some shirts. And obviously I know who he is. And he goes, all right, I'm Ray. I go, I know who you are, Ray. And I start selling him some shirts. And we get on really well. He buys a whole bunch of stuff and he walks out. It's all great. And I just tell my boss, I go, you wouldn't believe it. He just had Ray in. He goes, well, why aren't you getting pictures? And I'm like, well, I don't think it's cool to kind of just go, is it all right if I just get a picture of you and me outside the shop with the sign in the background? I don't feel like... So, I mean, anyway, is there a line that you feel like you need to stay behind with this sort of stuff?
I mean, it's a very good question. I'm as equally as bad as you. In that moment, you try and play it cool and behave as though nothing is going on. But I think if you do ask them, I think most, and you do it in the most courteous and upbeat manner, I think they're going to say yes, it's okay, because you're a startup and you need all the help and support and energy you can. Whereas if it's sort of a larger business who's got a big marketing budget, then, which we haven't, then they're likely to say no, because come at me through the correct channel, through your agent. But a small startup, I think most celebrities would probably say, yeah, come on, let's do it. I think you've got to sort of seize that. If I die tomorrow, will I regret this? So, I think normally it's better to ask and not ask, but sadly, I'm a bit like you in that circumstance. I sort of behave as though I don't even know who they are, and I'm very professional about it. And then when they've walked out the door, I'm like, what the hell did I just do?
I know, I know.
But I think it's better to ask, really.
Listen, Nick, it's been great talking to you. The website, I know the Instagram is neem_Londoner. Give the website a plug, please, to make sure people are going to the right place.
Yeah, so it's just neemlondon.com. I mean, if you Google Neem London, it should pop up. Pop into the store at 7 Piccadilly Arcade. If anyone ever says, I'm a Neem sir, we'll give you something free. It's a bit of fun. And then online, neemlondon.com.
Brilliant. Excellent. Well, great catching up with you, Nick. I'm going to, are you there? What's your day to day like? Are you in store?
I'm normally there Thursday, Friday, sort of Saturday till, not all every Saturday, but normally there most Thursdays, Fridays, and then most Saturdays till about sort of 2-3, depending on what I've got going on, how busy we are. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm elsewhere.
Awesome. Okay, great. Well, listen, I'm going to be around, so I'm going to drop in and say hey. But I recommend everybody else does if they're in the area, and if not, then just check them out online. And we'll put all the links over on the show notes over at Menswear Style. But for Nick, great catching up, and thanks for your time.
Wicked. Thanks very much. Cheers.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you'd like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.